pregame show, 102.5, 106.3, the game presented by The Beast Unleashed and by Parman Tractor and Equipment. Chris Sanders is here with me, former Titans receiver Derek Mason. We will catch up with him here momentarily as well. He, will, of course, will be with us as the Titans get set to take on the Panthers. Let's talk about Teddy's Tavern. That is our official pregame spot. And by the way, I my dad's a season ticket holder, and so they sent out the renewals for next season, which has to be a better season than this season. And apparently, there's going to be no parking next year.
Where?
On the other side of the river.
Wow.
Because of the construction for the new stadium.
Oh, that's right.
So all the parking is going to be on this side of the river.
It's going to be a mess.
And so I'm telling you, you got to figure out where your pregame spots are going to be if you're a tailgater. And Teddy's Tavern is the spot. Teddy's Tavern's brunch specials and Titans cocktails are available every Sunday from open until 2 o'clock. 2-for-1 mimosas and Bloody Marys from open until 2 on every Sunday. 2-for-1 draft beer all day every Sunday. Honestly, this might be better than tailgating for some people out there. You know, it's they got the best burger downtown and rooftop views overlooking all the excitement of Broadway and Bridgestone Arena. It's right across the street from Bridgestone Arena's Plaza. So, for instance, if you're going to the Predators game tonight, stop by Teddy's on your way in.
Make your way in.
Let's get to the Titans. They're not very good, Chris. At 3-7, they're taking on the 1-9 Carolina Panthers.
True.
And it feels like we're at the point in the season where the more interesting elements of this team, the more fascinating questions about where this team goes, lie in kind of the off-the-field drama than it does about what's actually happening on the football field. And when I say off-the-field drama, I'm really referring to the coach, Mike Vrabel. Story came out this week, Diana Russini saying that high-level sources with the Titans, which I assume is probably ownership, told her that the Titans are not interested in moving on from Mike Vrabel at the end of the year. They're not interested in trading him to the Patriots. I know, you know, with Ohio State losing last week, that's that's a whole nother can of worms. So what do we make of the game today? Because you've been on, you know, a bad team in your life.
A lot of bad teams.
So what do we make of the game today? And kind of the scenario surrounding what has been an incredibly disappointing Titans.
I mean, it's been a disappointing year, and we always talk about the situation that's going on off the field. But if you look at this Panthers team, like, this kind of gives me a little bit of hope because, you know, looking at this team, they're not a good team. I mean, they're giving up 16 points a game, and they're just not a good team. Their offensive line is struggling. All these things are going on that are absolutely bad. So when you got a Tennessee Titans struggling on the offensive line, they're struggling of making plays on the perimeter, it's still gives me hope because you got a Carolina Panthers team that is so bad. I mean, they are really, really bad. They're 1-8. I mean, they've given up 12 fumbles. So if the Tennessee Titans can just play a little bit of good football, then I think they can be okay.
Here's the thing that's crazy. A win today probably doesn't really do much in terms of, like, exciting us for the season or for a chance at the playoffs or turning a corner or whatever it might be. Losing today?
Oh, my gosh.
Could be catastrophic for Vrabel.
Ooh.
It could be bad for the quarterback because if you lose today, I mean, I think there's a legitimate chance that the Titans might sit there with the second or third pick in
the
draft, and they may be in position to draft one of these franchise quarterbacks that's supposed to be coming out this year. And then I just don't know. You know, I understand the idea that maybe Titans ownership, you know, they're doing one of two things when it comes to telling Diana that they're committed to Vrabel. Either one,
that means nothing, though.
One, they are committed to Vrabel, or two, it means that they are saying they're committed to Vrabel in hopes that somebody will want to trade for Vrabel. And if you're not committed to Vrabel, or they don't think that you're going to keep him as the coach, you don't have any leverage in order to trade him.
Yeah, but
see, it's the dreaded vote of confidence. I would agree, but at the same time, if you lose this game, I don't know if Vrabel can win these fans over at that point.
But who do you put the blame on? We've been talking about this all week. Do we put the blame on the coaches? Do we put it on the players? Let me read you a quote by Derrick Henry. Derrick Henry said this. He said, because it worked before, we know it can work again. It says it falls on us because we can't execute. So what do you put it on? He said, do we put it on the coaches or do we put it on the players? You know, I've been on both sides of the field. I've been a player to where I blame the coaches, but then being a coach, now I understand, you know, different things. The coaches can put you in position to make plays, but they can't put you in position to execute. Let me give you a perfect example.
So, wait a minute, you were saying that when you were a player, you would blame the coaches, and now that you're a coach, you blame the players?
No, I'm not saying I'm blaming.
I think that's what you said, right?
No, I'm just saying, but you can't. You know, a lot of times, a lot of the fans and a lot of people blame the coach. They said, okay, it's all the coach's fault. But did you just hear what Henry said? He said it relies on us. We got to execute. Look at the perfect example when they went against the I think it was the Bucks on the offensive line, where the linebacker is mugging the gap, and the two offense, the guard and the tackle don't communicate any blitzes, and he gets the quarterback. Do you blame that on the coaches or do you blame it on the players? I talked to Brad Hawkins. Brad Hawkins is one of the greatest offensive linemen to ever come in through the Tennessee Titans. He said when you're on the offensive line, you got to make sure you guys communicate and you're protecting a gap. When I say protecting a gap, that means both guys are communicating to protect the gap. So if you have a situation where the coach has been telling you all week to protect the gap, the linebacker's mugging, and you don't do it, do you put that on the coaches or do you put that on the players? I think you put it on the players.
So I would argue that I think that, you know, as far as why the Titans aren't good this year, I think there's a lot of different – I don't think it's like one particular thing, right?
Right.
Like, I think everybody wants it to be one thing to say, you know, and I think the A.J. Brown trade is a good example of this.
Yes.
Where people will say, well, we were bad last year because we traded A.J. Brown.
Right.
Like, forgiving the fact that the pass defense was awful last year and that didn't have anything to do with A.J. Brown. That Dennis Daly was awful last year at left tackle and that didn't have anything to do with A.J. Brown. So do I think you would have been a better football team with A.J. Brown last year? I do. But I don't think it's one particular thing. I think the Titans are paying for the fact that not only did they miss in the 2020 and 2021 drafts, but outside of Tier Tart, they really didn't do much, you know, to make up for that,
right?
Like, the Eagles missed in 2019 on Andre Dillard as their left tackle, but they signed or drafted late, or I can't remember if he's an undrafted free agent, Jordan Mailata, who's become their franchise left tackle.
Right.
You know, so they've been able to make up for some of their mistakes. It's like, yeah, Floyd Reese drafted Pac-Man Jones, and that didn't work out, but he also drafted Cortland Finnegan in the seventh round a year later, who became a Pro Bowl corner. So they haven't really had a lot of those makeups, you know, for mistakes, which you have to have, because not every pick is going to hit. Rashawn Evans didn't hit, but you made up for it by drafting David Long Jr. and him playing that spot. So I think certainly that's some of it. Robinson, you know, is not blameless when it comes to why the team is the way they are right now. But the Titans did a terrible job building this football team this offseason.
Yeah, but what do we keep talking about each and every offseason? We talk about a left tackle. And it keeps biting you in the butt each and every year. So, and then also we talk about the left tackle. Also, we talk about getting a kicker. They lucked up and got
a kicker.
They lucked up and got Nick Folk. But each and every year on an offseason, it's consistently saying the same song. I say this quote all the time. If you consistently put on the same record, you're going to hear the same song. I know you hate that quote. But we keep saying the same thing. Left tackle, kicker, you know, wide receiver. We keep saying that all year, each and every offseason. If they don't get no playmakers on this game, on the offensive line, but also at receiver, you're going to keep saying the same thing each and every year, and I'm just tired of hearing of it.
Well, what's crazy, though, to that point is that they really did. They won't admit this now. They really thought Andre Dillard was going to be their left tackle. Like, they really thought that was going to work. Like, they thought he was a former first-round pick who got beat out in Philadelphia, who needed a fresh start, who had talent, that we can coach him up. And little did they know, he sucks. They used the 11th overall pick on a lineman, and he's not even really that good right now. Like, he's struggling about Skoronski.
If
the Titans fans don't want to admit that, because I understand it's hard to admit that your guy is not, but Skoronski is struggling right now. They're in love with Aaron Brewer, and he's terrible. I mean, he can't snap. He's not big enough. He gets worked on every twist. I mean, so to answer your point, when you were like, so is it the players? Is it the coaching? Is it the – I think it's a combination of all of it, but I certainly think coach is a big problem right now for this team and this organization. And after last year, they empowered the coach to be able to do more with the roster. So, I mean, I think Vrabel, and I really have not been impressed with Rand Carthon, and I know people get mad when I say that, but I have not been through a year. Vrabel has failed this year. He has failed. And we can make all the excuses in the world we want for him, but there's no doubt in my mind that Mike Vrabel's arrogance is a leading factor as to why you are 3-7
this
year.
But who do you put the blame on? When you bring in guys like Dillard, Arden Key, and Al Shazier that didn't pan out like you wanted them to.
I told you I put the blame on.
No, I'm just saying, but then you put the blame on Mike Vrabel, but then who has the power? When I say the power, that who makes the final decision? We don't know that, and that's kind of where the gray area is coming in, is we want to put the blame on Mike Vrabel, but do we put on Rand Carthon? But who brought the guys in? You, just like the guys you named, Dillard, Arden Key, Al Shazier, you brought those guys in, but who made the decision to bring them in? And me and TD talked about
Trey
this.
Kevin Byard for a bag of footballs. Yeah,
now I may put that on Rand Carthon because he really I don't know.
I don't know who made it.
And I'll be respectful when I say I've
told
know.
You. Yeah. At the end of the year, if I owned a football team and things continued along this way, especially if you lose today to Carolina.
Oh man.
At the end of the year, I'd fire both of them. Like but, I'd clean house because I think that
year?
They yes, because I think they are incompetent. I think the two of them together. You're like, who's responsible for – you've got kids.
Yeah.
How often was it a who did it? Nobody saying, all right, well, if you don't tell me who did it, you're both getting in trouble.
Yeah.
That's how I feel about the commission the Titans are running right now is if you guys want to play secret about who's in charge of this organization, then I should get rid of both of you and go get somebody else to run this thing.
Yeah, but I think you still get Rand Carthon.
Why? What has he done to prove that he has
a
clue?
But he came into a situation that it wasn't his.
That's his fault?
How is that his fault?
Because he knew what he was signing up for.
But he's got to build the team how he wants to build it.
Why?
Why? What are you talking about?
Why do I owe Rand Carthon the opportunity to build the team in his image? That's not what he signed up for. That's not what they hired him for, and you know that.
No, but you gave Rob Johnson, J-Rob, the same.
J-Rob took the worst team in the NFL to 9-7 and on the door of the playoffs his first year.
But what if they would have lost
Rand Carthon hadn't done that.
Yeah, but this is his first year, man. Give him a chance
to
build.
You're trying to give me the equivalence of John Robinson. You're telling me, well, we gave John Robinson time. John Robinson won his first year.
No, sir.
Did he win his first year?
Yeah, it doesn't matter. You still let him build the team.
Winning is the only thing that matters.
I know, understands, but this is not his team.
You cannot tell me that winning does not matter.
I didn't say winning
doesn't
matter.
That's what you just said.
No, that's not true. I did not say that. You're putting words in my mouth, big dog. No way, sir, buddy.
What you're doing, and I understand, because I think a lot of people are doing this. They think it's unfair to Rand Carthon to clean house at the end of the year.
It's 1 year.
Right.
One.
So you think it's unfair.
I think so.
I don't care about fair. The NFL is not fair. Call Mike Mularkey and ask him if the NFL's fair. Because you saw how they did him.
When he came in, right, he comes into the draft. Now, I don't know who picked Skoronski, whoever. I don't know. But then you have a situation to where you need a left tackle. You need some wide receivers. And there's nothing out there. So now you come to a fresh year this year. Now you get a chance to build how you want to build.
What if there's nothing out there this year?
There's going to be some people out there. I mean,
there were some people out there last year. You just didn't sign them. Donovan Smith, the left tackle of the Kansas City Chiefs, signed for 1 year and $3 million.
How's he doing?
He is doing much better than Andre Dillard, who signed for $10 million.
Don't say much better. How's he doing?
He is starting at left tackle on the Kansas City Chiefs, and he doesn't give up a sack on every play.
He's doing awful.
So he is – no, he's not.
Yes, he is.
He's fine.
Okay.
He's fine. For $3 million, he's fine. You know, that's the thing is everyone's like, well, you got to have solutions for how they could have done better. And I'm like, okay, here's a solution. Well, that doesn't count.
So who's
it's out? Like, what so, are we talking okay,
so
about?
We, so we let Carthon go. Who's out there?
Tyers GM. Well, number one, let me just say this. This is why you interview people. Number two, to me, I would circle Thomas Dimitrov, who ran the Atlanta Falcons when they had Matt Ryan and, you know, they built it up and got to the NFC Championship game. Mm-hmm. Then they kind of had to tear it down a little bit. Then they built it back up and got to the Super Bowl. And, like, when you're up 28-3 in the Super Bowl, like, the GM is not responsible for you figuring out how to win that Super Bowl. You know, like, you're up 28-3. The GM's done his job.
Yeah.
And I felt like I think he's a good GM, Dimitrov. He's got experience. He knows how to run an operation. He's a smart guy. He's an analytical guy. Like, that's what I would do if I were in charge. I know I'm not. Mm-hmm. What I wonder with the Diana thing is, do we think the Titans are telling the truth? And do we think that the Titans are committed to Diana, or to what Diana's report is, that they're committed to Vrabel no matter what.
I don't believe him, because we had the same situation with A.J. Brown. Everybody said A.J. Brown's not going anywhere, and all of a sudden he goes anywhere. And then with the situation with J. Rob, you know, he just signs a contract to February, a new contract or extension in February, but then all of a sudden he leaves. So we don't know what the Tennessee Titans are going to say. So, you know, even though, you know, what's her name again? Miss, how you pronounce her name? The lady.
Diana Rossini.
Diana Rossini. She may say all that stuff, but at the end of the day, if you're losing three or four more games, there may be a situation to where there might be some volatile stuff that may happen in the locker room to where guys can't even get along. So even though she says it at that time, doesn't mean it's guaranteed that Mike Vrabel will even be here.
I think it's the truth that Titans ownership told Diana that they're committed to Vrabel.
But I don't
know if they're telling Diana the truth. So I think Diana is reporting the truth to us that Titans ownership says they're committed to Vrabel. I don't know if Titans ownership is telling the truth. And let's not forget, they said they were committed to Mike Mularkey and fired him like 3 days later. So I don't, you
know. After he won a game.
Oh, I mean, that's what I said about the Rand Carthon thing. People are like, well, it's not fair after 1 year. You know it's not fair? Going 9-7 with the worst team in the NFL, then going 9-7 again, winning a playoff game, and still getting fired. What do you make about your school, The Ohio State University, losing yesterday to Michigan, and now there's a lot of talk about Ryan Day can beat every other team in the country, but he cannot beat Michigan, which you know is unacceptable there, and the name that keeps popping up is Vrabel's.
That's a scary scenario. I mean, because if Ryan Day has a possibility of getting fired for losing one game and Mike Vrabel's name keeps coming up, that means there's some smoke somewhere. And if there's some smoke somewhere, there's a fire. So even though there's speculation and people don't actually know, but if his name keeps coming up with this or the Patriots or whatever, then there's something there. But at the end of the day, it all depends on these 3 and 4 games. And if the Tennessee Titans lose these 3 or 4 games and it gets so bad in the organization, you don't think that he might want to go back to Ohio State or go to the Patriots because it's so intolerable in that situation. So we just got to sit back like Days of Our Lives, like watching a story, and just sit back and watch what happens.
As an Ohio State fan, do you want Vrabel to be the coach? you guys were teammates at Ohio State.
Which part? Here with the Titans or Ohio State?
Ohio State.
Can we go to commercial break?
Coming up next, we'll take a look at the big four storylines here. We'll move the chains as always. We are live once again downtown Nashville. Teddy's Tavern is the spot to be, just steps from the Ryman and Bridgestone Arena, a couple blocks from the pedestrian bridge. Teddy's Tavern is where you want to be for the pregame of all the hottest events in Nashville, and try their specialty Titans-themed cocktails during brunch, including the T-Rack Sack and Titan Water, as well as 2-for-1 mimosas and Bloody Marys until 2 o'clock. It's the pregame show, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Downtown Nashville here on the pregame show. Again, Teddy's Tavern, the spot to be. Catch the Titans take on the Panthers and all the other games today from Teddy's Tavern, second floor lounge and rooftop right across the street from the plaza at Bridgestone Arena. Chris Sanders,
yes,
let's
sir.
Hit the four
let's
big storylines today. Let's move the chains. And, of course, we always start with first down. Oh, Connor. Oh, man. All right, first down. Let's start there. The Panthers are terrible.
Oh, my goodness.
They're going to fire their coach at the end of the year. They're 1-9. Frank Reich's in his first year. By the way, I don't hear anybody complaining about how he's only getting 1 year. But Frank Reich's going to get fired at the end of the year. They're terrible. They traded away their entire team in order to be able to draft Bryce Young. They traded away McCaffrey last year. And it really is Bryce Young and a bunch of nothing. Does it make you nervous?
No, not at all. I mean, I'm gonna be a statistic guy right now, and I'm gonna tell you how bad this team is. And just like I said, they're giving up 16 points a game. I mean, they're scoring 16 points a game. They're giving up 27 third down at 37%. They only have 92 yards rushing. They've given up 12 fumbles, and then also they're only passing 129 yards per game. So you have a situation like that where you got a struggling rookie quarterback, and you got an offensive line that's absolutely bad. And then on offense, you know, they have one guy that scares you. That's the tight end. That's Hurst. So you have a situation to where the Tennessee Titans are playing battle offense, defense, special teams. But I just think that this Panther team is so bad on all areas. And if the Tennessee Titans don't come in and blow them out, I'm going to be very, very surprised.
Now, the Panthers do have, I think, the sixth-ranked defense in the NFL.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, they got a couple of guys. They got Burns. Burns is a good-looking player. But other than that, I mean, who else scares you on that defense? I mean, they only have, I think they only have like 18 or 19 sacks. I mean, it just shows you, even though they're rallying to the ball, they're still not creating turnovers. So, you know, even though, you know, the Tennessee Titans are playing bad on all facets of the game, I just think that the Panthers are even the worst team. They're 1-8 in the NFC South.
That takes us to second down. Jalen Duncan will make his first career start at left tackle. It's funny, I was reading the scouting report on Jalen Duncan, who I remember when the Titans drafted him in the sixth round this year out of Maryland, and it said, I can't remember if I was watching ESPN or if I was watching NFL Network, but a giant graphic came up on the screen that said, most sacks allowed in the Big Ten. And I thought to myself, what? Like, you're drafting the guy with the most sacks? Now, he's got legitimate size.
Yeah.
He's got legitimate athleticism. The problem is he's just not very good, or at least he wasn't in college. They viewed him as kind of a project. So they bring in Jalen Duncan. Mm. Out for the year is Chris Hubbard. Out for the year is Nicholas Petit-Frere. Andre Dillard's terrible. Jalen Duncan is going to start at left tackle this week. And when I read his draft profile, it talked about how Duncan might be better suited to play guard in the NFL.
But did you put him at tackle?
And Blake Bedingfield thinks that he's got the potential to be a decent guard in the NFL. But they're going to put him at tackle. Skoronski, who played tackle in college, stays at guard. So that means Brian Burns, who is a legitimate A1 pass rusher in the NFL, will be going up against Jalen Duncan, making his first career start at left tackle. How you feel?
And how many sacks has he given up?
Last year, he led the Big Ten in sacks allowed.
I mean, it's I'm trying not to laugh, but it's just funny because the statistic that you've given, but it just shows you that we've been talking about this the whole season, the last season before that, that you got to get a solid left tackle, and we keep saying the same thing. And you better believe that the Carolina Panthers defensive coordinator is going to be licking his chops when he hears statistics like that. So I don't know what they're going to do. I just think that the defensive coordinator the offensive coordinator, Tim Kelly, is going to make sure he has to put this guy in position to excel. And the way he can excel is you got to play a lot of 12 personnel. When I say 12 personnel, that's one back and two tights to protect him. Because if he's giving up 10 sacks and he doesn't, you know how to understand how to, pass pro and giving up sacks, you got to make sure as an offensive coordinator that I have to protect him.
Here's the other thing, too, about Duncan and the fact that he was a project and that they drafted him basically to sit on the bench, to develop this year, to work, you know, to get better for next year. Like, they didn't draft him with this year in mind.
Okay.
It feels to me, and I think they do this too often, specifically on the offensive line where I don't trust the coaching there, they set guys up to fail. And this feels like a situation where they're setting somebody up to fail. I'm not saying Jalen Duncan's any good, but he's a raw rookie who your original plans were for him not to play, and now you're playing him at left tackle because you already screwed up the other left tackle. So you're putting him in there. You screwed up on picking Dillard. So now you're going to put him in there, and he's going to go up in his first NFL game against Brian Burns. That does not sound like a recipe for success.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you 100%, but what Tim Kelly has to do, and just like what I said before, he's got to put a tightening on that side to really help him, because now this will be coaching if – They put Burns on Duncan and they go 1-on-1 the whole game. Then that's coaching, because you know that this guy's giving up 10 sacks and he's still trying to learn. You said the key word, he's developing. He's not there yet. So as a coach, if I know that he needs help, then I got to put him in a position to succeed. Put him in a position to succeed means that I got to go a 12 personnel and put an extra tight end to make sure I protect him. Because if they have him out there with an open end, when I said open end, with no tight end, and you're going against Burns that has 5 sacks and 28 tackles. That is a recipe for disaster.
That takes us to third down. One of the nuggets hidden in the Diana Russini report about the Titans' commitment to Mike Vrabel is this line, quote, while the Titans are still trying to figure out if rookie quarterback Will Levis is their quarterback of the future, the clearest version of the team is who will be their leader for years to come. That, of course, in reference to Vrabel. Mm-hmm. But the part that she mentioned was the Titans are trying to figure out if Will Levis is their quarterback of the future.
Whoa.
What do we make of that? And what do we make of that if they're not committed to Levis, if they're in a wait-and-see approach with Levis, and you lose to Carolina, you might be in position to draft a Caleb Williams or a Drake May up this year in the draft. I think there are huge implications, Chris, today for Will Levis.
Trying to figure it out. Those are some big words. If you're trying to figure it out, I thought that we had it cemented when he played against the Falcons when he threw those four touchdowns. But then we got to understand, I want to go back to that game also. When we talk about that Falcons game, that was the easiest thing for a quarterback to have. I mean, they went cover one and one safety high. That's man-to-man across the board and one safety. And all you got to do is throw the ball up and let your players make the play. Then now he plays in a couple of games and he struggles a little bit. Now you're starting to say those words, is he our quarterback? I mean, those are concerning words. So, you know, these last three or four games are going to be so telling, because you're going to see if this guy can come out and make plays. I know he's going against a defense that's sixth ranked, you know, in the league. But if he comes out and he squanders and he throws interceptions and he fumbles, then I think the quote that you said is going to come to fruition.
Well, I just think it's ridiculous to think that Levis could do any better with the group that he has around him.
That's a good point. But, yeah, I mean, that is a great point. I mean, you got an offensive line that's given up 35 sacks already, so you can't really see if he can be the future of our quarterback. But if you're saying a statement of what you just said, that's very, 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 very concerning.
And it's telling of an organization that doesn't know what they're doing.
That's unsettling for the fans if you're not settled on your quarterback already.
I remember Floyd used to say to you, I think this was off the air that he said to you, he was like, I don't ever remember this idea that, like, Steve wasn't our guy.
Oh, we knew it. We knew that. Even though he was in the process of developing, you knew that something was there. We knew the potential was there. We knew this guy can make some plays. And when he actually took reign of the position and not having Chris Chandler in his back pocket, then now he can come. He became the quarterback that he was capable of doing. Let me tell you something. When Steve McNair came in, he struggled. He struggled of understanding coverages. He struggled with trying to find his second and third read. But at the end of the day, once he developed into that quarterback, we absolutely knew that he was our quarterback in the future.
That takes us to fourth down. Mike Vrabel says this week, no changes to the coaching staff. Now, Mike Tomlin in Pittsburgh is making changes to the coaching
You're
staff.
Out of here.
Ron Rivera in Washington is making changes to the coaching staff, but no changes to the coaching staff with this Titans team, because according to Vrabel, they are doing a good job. He knows because he played in the NFL, Chris. You played in the NFL.
I did.
Your thoughts on Vrabel not exploring the idea of making changes on the coaching staff?
If I'm a head coach, I don't want to start making changes already, because basically what you're doing is you're waving the white flag. I'm not saying those other coaches are doing that, but you got to look at the Tennessee Titans record. They're 3-8. So when you start firing coaches, you start getting people out of there, basically what you're saying is I've given up on the season. I understand you don't like the special teams coach.
Well, I don't think the Steelers are saying that.
I'm not saying
up
that,
on the season.
But see, they're still in the hunt, so they can kind of get away with it. But you're looking at a situation to where the Tennessee Titans are 3-8. They're going against the Panthers that's 1-8. And if they lose and you start making decisions of getting coaches out of here and making a whole bunch of changes, basically what you're saying is I'm throwing in the white flag and I'm going to find a different way to do this thing.
I think that Mike Vrabel is too loyal to his coaches. I think he's too arrogant about his coaches. I think if it were up to him, and my guess is it wasn't up to him, he probably would have kept Todd Downing after last year. I think he still thinks those guys he fired last year are good coaches. I think Vrabel hires a coach, and once he hires a coach, he thinks this guy is his guy.
I mean, he's in a tough situation. I mean, I don't understand he wants to protect his coaches, but then, you know, everybody's saying get rid of him. But one thing you got to understand about coaching, Jared, is when you start bringing different coaches in, you let a wide receiver coach go and then you bring another one in, he brings a different philosophy. Now you got to change everything to adapt to his receivers. So even though the easy thing to do is to get rid of the coach, but you got to remember the other coach that you're bringing in is bringing in his philosophy. So what I would do is if I was Mike Vrabel, if they lose these 3 and 4 games or lose whatever, stay with the coaches and make some changes after the season.
Those are the four downs, moving the chains. Coming up next, we will hook up with D-Mace. We'll take a look at the Titans offense as they get set to take on the seventh-ranked, I said sixth, I was wrong, seventh, the seventh-ranked defense in the NFL, the Carolina Panthers. We'll do that next. It's the pregame show, the award-winning pregame show on 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Live from Teddy's Tavern here, it is the pregame show, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Time to go inside the playbook on offense. Derek Mason, let's start with you.
Let's go.
Here on the pregame show, we were just talking about the Diana Russini report, in which Diana Russini says at the end that the Titans are still trying to figure out if Will Levis is the quarterback of the future. Here they sit today against the Panthers. If they lose, they may be in position to pick a quarterback this year. At the same time, I'm having a hard time trying to figure out what Levis is supposed to do with these offensive players around him. What do we make of Levis today against the Panthers and how important this game is for his career and tenure as the Titan quarterback?
I mean, it's unfair to him that he has to go out there and, you know, behind a, you know, well, in front of a offensive line that can't, you know, that can't block in a phone booth at this particular time, and you're going to, this is going to be a wholehearted evaluation of a quarterback that's basically put behind an eight ball. I mean, I could see if he was blocking in front of, you know, B-Hop, Zach, Benji, you know, Bruce, those guys, then you can evaluate him as a quarterback. But there's no way in hell you can evaluate him, you know, under these conditions. I believe he's doing a good job. He's doing the best job that he can. Yeah, listen, is he going to miss some plays? Yes, he's going to miss some plays. Is he going to have bad reads? Absolutely he's going to have bad reads. He's a rookie quarterback. But then you put on top of that a bad offensive line and guys dropping footballs. I mean, you can't what more do you expect of him? I expect for him to go out there and just perform as best he can with the situation he's in. That's the only thing you can expect of especially a young quarterback. Again, I could see if you were evaluating, you know, a veteran quarterback or evaluating, you know, the quarterback under a different circumstance, then yes. But under this circumstance, you can't get an evaluation, a true evaluation of what type of quarterback he's ultimately going to be. We could have said that last year about Trevor Lawrence. We could have said that years prior about other quarterbacks when they were put in situations where they could not thrive. Change the situation and then see if he can thrive.
Yeah, and then you have one consistent wide receiver, I mean, which is D-Hop. And you got NWI that makes a play here and there. And then you have Moore that's 1 for 39. So if you don't have, you know, your two or three consistent wide receivers, then how are you going to thrive and get evaluated the proper way? So I agree with Derek 100,000%. I think it's unfair. I think that, you know, you brought him in because you want him to be the future. But if you don't evaluate him the correct way, then you're going to damage this kid.
Well, here's the other thing, too, as far as the offense is concerned, which is I don't not only think that they're in position for him to be good, I'm not sure I really feel confident in the coaching staff that is running the offense. Not, I mean, I do actually think Tim Kelly's doing a decent job, but I'm talking more about, you know, the offensive line coach that we've talked a lot about and putting him in position to be successful behind this line. He's going to have Jalen Duncan, a sixth-round rookie playing left tackle, making his first career start, a guy who was drafted to be a project, who Blake Bedingfield wrote at PaulKaharski.com this week. He thinks he's more of a guard than he is a tackle anyways, and he's going to be going up against Brian Burns today. How is that setting Will Levis up for success?
It's not. So, again, I go back to how can you truly give an evaluation if he's not set up to succeed? The coach's job in this profession is put your players in a position that they can succeed. And right now, Will Levis has the talent. We see the talent. But he doesn't. He's not put in a position to succeed. You know, we go back to the Atlanta game. I think that was a game where it was tailor-made for a young quarterback to come in because they played a lot of man-to-man across the board. They were quick and easy. He could recognize the defense very quickly and very easy. And he just allowed his receivers to go up and make plays. And for the most part, they did. They haven't, moving forward, they haven't put this young kid in a position. And I'm not blaming Tim Kelly or Charles London. It's whoever put this offensive line together or whoever chose not to put this offensive line back together, an offensive line that, one, could could protect your quarterback in Ryan Tannehill, but then if you were going to make a change that could ultimately protect your quarterback in Will Levis. Right now, they can't protect either quarterback. We laughed and we talked about Malik Willis and how bad he was.
Yep.
I even said they didn't give him an opportunity last year. He shouldn't have been out there with that awful line. And then you throw him back out there and he didn't look good again. And then you throw Will Levis out there. He looks good, but then he has his bad moments. Why? Because that offensive line, they're not even giving him seriously. There were five or six plays in the last game that I counted. They didn't even get that man 2 seconds to throw the football.
Yeah.
You can't operate under that premise. You just can't. You can't operate under those conditions.
And they're giving him a tight end that can't catch.
Absolutely.
And outside of DeAndre, the wide receiving core is lacking, although I do think Chris Moore's pretty good.
They just don't. They don't give him an opportunity. Nope. They don't give him enough of an opportunity to go out there and show that he can ball. Because Chris Moore, to me, can play.
The young man can play.
But they just don't give him opportunities.
But here's what bothers me, too, about the way that we evaluate quarterbacks. And, you know, Will Levis's passer rating last Sunday against Jacksonville was through the roof because they hit the trick plays and he didn't throw a lot of incompletions and he threw 2 touchdown passes and he didn't throw an interception. I mean, his quarterback rating was double of Mahomes on Monday night. He did not play doubly better than Patrick Mahomes.
No, he didn't play on Monday night.
But, again, that's how we analyze this. So if I'm Will Levis and I feel like I'm being evaluated, instead of actually going out there and trying to win the game or trying to play quarterback, what I'm going to do is I'm going to want to make sure that I don't throw interceptions because it hurts my quarterback rating or it hurts my stats or whatever it might be that people will hold against me, and I don't want that. And as easy as it is to say, hey, don't worry about that, I mean, that's one thing. And then you got Diana Russini writing, well, they're still trying to figure out if he's any good on the other hand. And it's like, well, hold on. Now what's he supposed to do? And the reason I bring all this up is because Chris Moore, they should be throwing the deep ball to Chris Moore.
Yeah.
And if it's incomplete, it's incomplete. If it gets intercepted, it gets intercepted. But I'm not sure that if I was advising Will Levis that I would tell him to do that because he has to, quote, unquote, prove himself this year. And regardless of how insignificant your interceptions might be in some of these games, they still get used against you. They still count. They're still on they're still on the back of your baseball card, and they still will be used against you if you throw them. So I'm not sure that is in the best interest of Will Levis to go out there and take chances because it'll be used against him because the team won't commit to him as the quarterback of the future.
I think the coach has put the kid in a position to succeed. We talked a little bit about.
Hold on, say that again.
To succeed, is that?
You think this coach has put Will Levis in a position to succeed?
I said they need to.
Oh, okay.
They need to because the reason why I say that.
fight!
If he thought Vrabel was putting him in position to succeed, then I would have. We might have had something on that one.
No, I'm just saying if we know that Chris Moore is the one receiver that can take the top off the defense, and you have an offensive line that's struggling, so what if I'm the offensive coordinator and I'm Tim Kelly? I'm going to go 22 personnel. That's 2 backs, 2 tight ends, and 1 wide receiver to get max protection and just throw the ball. So now you have at least. You have a situation to where, you know, the quarterback's protected and you got one-on-one on the outside. Look at the situation. I think it was when they played Baltimore and in the playoffs and they threw the bomb to – what was that receiver's name?
Khalif Raymond.
Khalif Raymond. That's the same situation. They went 22 personnel, you know, and threw the ball. It was one-on-one on the outside. So do the same thing with Chris Moore. So now you have the receivers to excel, and then you have the quarterback that feels confident in throwing the long ball because he's protected. But now when you go this formation, when you're going 11 personnel, 1 back, 1 tight, and 3 wide receivers, you don't have the protection when you have an open end. When I say open end, that's you don't have a tight end. So that's where the coach needs to make sure he makes the player, you know, feel comfortable.
Yeah, it's just unfortunate for the young guy that that he walks into a situation where, you know, it's not advantageous for a young quarterback. Hell, it's not advantageous for any quarterback, not just a young quarterback.
Right.
You know, he has to worry about making sure everyone's in a proper place, reading the defense, and finding an open guy. He doesn't need to be worrying about if I'm going to get more than a second and a half to throw the football or, you know, you get happy feet in that pocket. But that's one thing I can say that I have not seen from Will Levis, happy feet in the pocket. And he should have it because every time he takes a snap, somebody's around him. Somebody's at his feet. He has not got happy feet. He still goes to his progressions and tries to find the open guy. I think sometimes he holds the ball a little bit too long because he's trying to make a play, and that causes him that when he finally delivers it, he gets hit. But he has no other recourse. This, again, the focus should be on the offensive line first. Mm-hmm. That should be the focus. Then the quarterback. And if that's the focus, then I should be able to look at the film objectively and say, okay, what would any other quarterback do under this scenario? I don't think there's a quarterback in the NFL playing today or played yesterday that could thrive under these conditions. None. And that falls right at the feet of the head coach.
What do you think about how Skowronski's playing right now?
I mean, he's playing okay. I don't think he's gotten significantly better. He's dealt with his injuries. He's been in and out of lineup somewhat. And then, too, here's the problem. He's not going to get better unless he has stability on both sides mm-hmm. of him. He has no stability at the left tackle. He has really no stability at the center position because the center gets pushed every play around the yard as if they were in a playground, you know, just playing around. So he has no stability to the left or the right of him. How can then he go out and do his job at a high clip each and every play, knowing that he really doesn't have any help on either side? Mm-hmm. To me, that's you set up your guard for failure, and you set your quarterback up for failure. But the guard hasn't gotten any better, and it's one of those deals where, you know, until they bring in another offensive line coach, I don't know if he can or will. I said that about the quarterbacks. Under the last quarterbacks coach, I said I saw no development in the quarterbacks. I didn't see any development in White House. I didn't see any development in Malik Willis. No quarterbacks that the Titans drafted or brought in under Mike Vrabel in the previous quarterbacks coach. None of those guys show any development. He needed to go. They got rid of him. I'm seeing development in the two young guys. Now, one guy's a little bit ahead of the other, and we all know who that is. Sure. But I've seen development in both guys. So two guys that I'm not pinning this on, Tim Kelly and Charles London. Mm-hmm. Those are the two guys I'm not pinning any of this on because they're at their position, they've gotten better. Tim Kelly is a better play caller than the last play caller. This all falls at the feet of whoever put that offensive line together or whoever chose not to put that offensive line together.
Well, I tell you where it lies at the feet of Mike Vrabel.
Exactly.
I mean, I don't understand why we have to walk around it. Let's get onto the defensive side because they suck too. So we'll do that coming up. We are live from Teddy's Tavern out here. Again,
it's
I said dude, this earlier man. Today on the show.
It's dude.
So if you are a season ticket holder, you got your renewals from the Titans. And if you're somebody who's got parking at the stadium for next year, you also, you know, you got your opportunity to renew your parking. But because of the stadium construction, there will be no parking on that side of the river next season. All the parking will be on this side of the river with the stadium construction. So a lot of you people are tailgaters. A lot of you are on your way to the stadium to tailgate. A lot of you are probably listening right now to this program in the parking lot at the stadium while you tailgate. Let me say this. Teddy's Tavern here downtown, perfect spot. If you're going to be forced to park over here next year, perfect spot for your tailgate spot and then hit the bridge and get onto the game next season. Just something to keep in mind for everybody out there.
Well, thank you, Jared.
You had that look on your face when I told you no parking on the other side.
It was like, man, I'm not saying I would never say don't go to a game, but it's going to be very hard to go to a game. One, if they don't fix these problems. And then two, if you don't have any parking, you know, near the stadium. People like to tailgate. People like to do things. They don't want to park a mile away.
Oh, I tell you this right now. What's going on right now, like the where the franchise sits, I mean, they are headed towards disastrous territory with trying to open a new stadium, with trying to sell PSLs for the new stadium, and having a team that is completely directionless and clueless. It is not a place you want to be in. And that's parking aside. Because if the team's good, people will come, even if they got to figure out how to park. If the team's not good, I don't know how many people are going today. That's we'll take a look at the defense. It's a pregame show, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Inside the Playbook on defense. Guys, the Titans defense stinks, and I don't know why it stinks as bad as it does. They weren't this bad last year.
Right.
They weren't this bad at the beginning of the year. We were convinced in training camp that they were actually going to be good. They were talking about being an elite defense. Kevin Byard said in training camp he thought they could be one of the best defenses in the NFL. He's not even here anymore, which is probably another reason why they're not so good.
No, they weren't good anyway.
But they really have not gotten any better. I mean, Molden is terrible. he's the guy that's basically replaced Byard, and he's horrible. Why is the defense so bad? I am convinced on the offensive line that collection of players is so bad that even if, you know, Newt Rockne was coaching them, it might not make a difference. I am not convinced about that with the talent of the defense. I think there are good players on defense, and I just think that the defense is atrocious. Your thoughts?
Well, I mean, based upon what they have or have not done over the course of the last 4 weeks, it's not a horrible defense. It's just it's an okay defense, and we expect it better than okay.
I don't think it's okay.
I mean, they're only giving up, 20 points a game? They're still tops in the NFL. Well, not tops in the NFL. They're still in the top 5 or 10 in regards to that.
I know, but they never make a big play anymore.
And that's that's what I'm saying. They're an okay defense. We expected them to be a really good defense
because of
what we saw in preseason.
I cannot hear okay.
And everything else.
I can't do okay.
I mean, I'm not saying that okay is okay.
No.
But what I'm saying is
this. No, I'm telling you, I think you're wrong that they're not okay.
What we expected of this team from a defensive standpoint, we expected a defense to shut down a running game. Don't average over 100 yards. We expected, them to get more sacks. If you expected the secondary to be better than what it is, then that's your fault. This secondary has been the last couple of seasons. It hasn't been good. It's been their Achilles heel. The defensive line has held up this defense for as long as they possibly can. I am telling you what the problem is here. When a defense gives their all and they go out there each and every game, they expect some help from the offense.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not getting any help from offense. And then they are left on the field way too long and put in situations that they don't need to be put in each and every game. You can have a lights out defense, but if offensively, just like the Jets have one of the best defenses in the National Football League, but because their offense doesn't score points, eventually the dam breaks.
Mm-hmm.
And it has broke several times with the Jets. So think about that with the Titans. The talent on defense is nowhere near the talent on defense that the Jets got. They don't have the secondary the Jets have.
They have Quinton Williams.
Yeah, some of the guys up front, we can go back and forth with the Jets and the Titans. But the Titans, they can't hold as long as a Jets defense because they don't have the guys on the back end that can help the guys up front. This team, I'm disappointed in the defense because I expected more. I don't think this defense is horrible. I just think they're okay. And we didn't expect okay, nor should we accept okay. This is a defense that prided themselves on stopping the run, making it difficult for people to score, beating their chest. We're going to be the best defense or one of the best defenses in the NFL, and they're just not.
Yep. Here's the thing that concerns me. You hit it on it a minute ago, is the secondary, D. Mm-hmm. If you watched the last game when they were playing the Jags, and I couldn't believe it. I was watching it on TV, and I think it was 3rd and 10, getting ready to go score a touchdown, and you have Armani Hooker on Ridley. I mean that is incredible. When you have a explosive wide receiver, you got to get somebody that can cover. I know nobody can't cover on their team, but you got to get somebody there that can accidentally cover.
I asked Vrabel about that.
I'm just saying that
I sat there the same way you did. I'm watching a game on TV, and I see a safety matched up on their best receiver, and I'm like, I don't ever see DeAndre Hopkins matched up in the red zone with a safety, man for man. And so I asked Vrabel, I said, how does that happen? And he was like, well, that was the coverage we were in. And plus, Armani might be one of our better guys in that situation.
See.
And I'm like,
see, that's what concerns me.
It's not my fault.
Mm-hmm.
But I also don't think that Armani is better at covering a receiver than a corner is.
Right, but what I'm saying is it's not just that week. It's each and every week. I mean, look at when they played
against
the Bucks.
So what bothered me last week,
what's that?
Was there was a 4th and 4, and, you know, Lawrence starts to run, and Christian Fulton decides to play hero ball, that he's going to go try to make the play, and all Lawrence does is just pop it to the guy right in his zone who cuts it up for 35 yards. They end up scoring a touchdown, essentially ends the game.
Yeah, and it's
those are the
week.
Things that, again, it doesn't matter that your offense sucks. It doesn't matter. Like, Christian Fulton has blown way too many coverages this year. You know, I mean, they hit a touchdown to Ridley on a vertical shot against two man. How does that happen?
That's what I'm talking about.
If a team
about.
Was playing two-man, you were a deep
yeah,
threat.
Yeah, two-man. It's two-man.
If they were playing two-man, you know that you're not going to be able to catch the ball vertical.
Because
there's a safety
over top. You got man underneath. You got the safety over top. But, you know, Jared, to answer your question, it happens each and every week. I mean, look at what they did with Evans. When he had 7 for 103, then you got the kid from Pittsburgh, Johnson. Then you got Cooper, had 119 yards. They played with Cleveland. It's not just happening each and every – I mean, it's not just happening every other week. It's happening each and every week. And I think the defensive coordinator, Shane Bourne, is going to have to figure out a way to put these guys in position to succeed. I just don't understand. And I'm never going to disrespect a coach. But when I saw that, when it's 10 yards to make a touchdown and you have Amani Hooker on one of the most explosive receivers in the NFL, that's what concerns me.
Well, yeah. One, Amani was flat-footed. You can't be in that position.
No.
You got to play the back line of the end zone. Allow that to be your 12th man. You can't sit there flat-footed. You have to, you know, sort of give leverage to one side or another. He did, but he played flat-footed, and he just couldn't get out of his stance quick enough. It was a really good ball thrown by Trevor Lawrence, but those along with other things that we've seen in the secondary. This is the Titans' Achilles heel.
Should Shane Bourne be on the hot seat?
I think Shane Bourne should be on the hot seat. The way this team has not performed over the last two seasons, basically, everyone should be, you know, on a hot seat. No one should be, like, bumping their chest like, I got my job, I'm good. You know why? Because there's not many players in that locker room that are bumping their chest saying, oh, I'm going to have my job next year. There's only maybe a handful of guys that can say that, and we know who those guys are. So if the players can't walk around thinking that, then the coaches shouldn't be able to. Because, again, I look at Shane Bourne before Schwartz, and I look at him after Schwartz. I'm not saying it was Schwartz, but damn it. If it's a duck, if it looks like a duck, walk like a duck, and quack like a duck is a duck. Okay, so to me, Schwartzy had something to do with that. Had something to do with that defense playing the way that they were playing, because before he got there, you were not good. And supposedly Shane Bourne and Mike Vrabel and whoever else was running the defense. And then after he leaves, the defense takes a few steps back.
Do you think that Mike Vrabel thinks that – do you think he believes any of what you just said?
Probably not. Listening to Vrabel and how he's answered some of the questions regarding his coaches, I don't think he believes it. I think he's – listen, I know what we're doing. We're coaching the guys up. I know what – I believe in my coaching. And I get it. The coaches that get – you know what? You know who else believed in his coaching? Jack Del Rio. And you know where his ass is at right now? Right. He's back at home. He's not coaching this week, okay?
But when you said, I get it, I'm thinking, I mean, I get it. Yeah. There have been times in my life where my head has been shoved up my ass. And so, that's what's going on with Vrabel right now.
I think he believes it. But what you believe and what we're seeing is two different things.
Yep.
You know, so.
Speaking of Vrabel, there was a big newsworthy nugget to discuss from Thanksgiving Day on Vrabel, which we will get to, and the injury report, who's in, who's out for the Titans. We'll do that coming up next. We are live from Teddy's Tavern downtown, right across the street from the Bridgestone Arena Plaza. It is the award-winning pregame show on 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Time now to take a look at the injury report live from Teddy's Tavern out here at downtown Nashville. Who is in and who's out for the Panthers? Running back Raheem Blackshear is inactive. Corner C.J. Henderson, who's probably their best DB, he's out. Offensive tackle Ricky Lee is out. Tight end Hayden Hurst is out.
Whoa.
And wide receiver Terrence Marshall Jr. is inactive. So by my count, that means that Adam Thielen is the only good player that they have that will be playing today for the Panthers.
Okay, then he gets 200 yards, and what you going to say?
That the Titans suck? Inactives for the Titans. Wide receiver Treylon Burks.
What?
Safety Terrell Edmonds is inactive. Quarterback Malik Willis. Linebacker Caleb Murphy. Linebacker Trevis Gibson are inactive today for the Titans. Now, I want both of your opinions on this. Diana Russini on Thanksgiving put out a story in The Athletic that she has talked to high-level sources with the Titans. And just a little inside baseball for everybody out there, because we work with somebody who works at The Athletic in Joe. We know what the editorial standards are for The Athletic. Diana is basically saying, without saying, she talked to the owners.
Uh-huh.
And that the owners are committed to Mike Vrabel and that they're not going to trade him to the Patriots. They're not going to fire him. They're not going to anything with Vrabel, which takes me to, what do we make of that? Do we believe it? And if so, why do we think the Titans are so committed to Vrabel, and is that a good idea or not?
I don't believe it. I mean, because if you look at the same situation have with J. Rob signed an extension, all of a sudden they let him go. And then the situation with A.J. Brown, they said he's a part of his team. Next thing you know, he gets traded to Philadelphia.
Malarkey.
Even the situation with Malarkey. So I'm not believing anything that they say, because it goes down to this. If they lose, you know, 4 or 5 more games and it gets so hostile in there, the guys don't get along, I guarantee you they're going to make some decisions to get Mike Vrabel out of there, because you can't work in an environment where people can't get along. And we talked a little bit about off-air about what kind of things are going on in there. So if they lose these games and it gets so hostile in there, don't be surprised if he's with the Patriots or with The Ohio State University.
I'm going to tell you what it boils down to, this. The minute that the narrative outside of Nashville changes, that's when he will get fired.
Yep.
To me. I don't think people, here, in Nashville or the surrounding areas, I'm sure there's probably half that's tired of Vrabel and his stuff, and there's probably half that's saying, you know what, let's keep him. It's not all his fault, yada, yada, whatever. But the narrative or the consensus outside of Nashville or Tennessee is Vrabel's a great coach. Oh, my goodness, he's just godsend. Oh, my goodness, he's won 5 Super Bowls. That's the way they talk about him.
Like that we're lucky enough
exactly
to have
right.
Mike
we're
Vrabel.
Lucky. Right. You're lucky to have Mike Vrabel. You know what? Look at your franchise before Vrabel got there. Well, if you really look at it, Mike Malarkey had
absolutely
the thing turned around, yep, and he was headed in the right direction. But people on the outside look at it as, oh, he was a godsend. Y'all better not get rid of him. The minute that narrative changes on the outside, if he continues to lose and you say you want to keep him and he lose to start the season, yeah, he might be gone during the season.
That's what I'm saying.
Right now, yeah, it's all peachy creamy. Everything's fine.
You really think that, though?
Yes.
I think
you
gonna,
think ownership
absolutely
thinks that Vrabel is completely blameless for what we're looking at right now?
I think they're going to give him another opportunity. I really do. They're going to ask him to make some coaching changes. Now, if he doesn't make the coaching changes, then that may be the excuse they can give to, move on from Vrabel. I think he will make the necessary coaching changes, and it has to start with the offensive line coach and then the defense coordinator, to me. But if he doesn't make them, then we can say that, that could be our excuse to fire him. But if he makes the changes that they want him to make, because they're so scared, I think management is so scared that if they do what they believe they need to do, if they continue to lose, that he goes somewhere else and he starts winning. And then everybody looks at them and say, you should have kept him another year. You should have given him an opportunity to turn the franchise around. But my thing is, he helped put them in this mess that they're in now. So I don't think they'll do anything at the end of the season. I think their plans are to keep him unless it just gets – now, if they lose to Carolina
– I'm telling you, it's going to get nasty.
Today that, is a game
that,
where
yeah,
there's
that,
no defensive
it can change
losing today.
Yeah, it can change. If they lose to Carolina, it can change. But as of now, I think they're going to give another shot at trying to get this thing right.
You know, under just those words you said that the lady said – I keep – how do you pronounce
Diana
it?
Diana Russina.
Diana Russina. is that those are just cute words right now. I mean, just to keep peace, because it's already a lot of stuff that's going on. So now, just like what we're talking about, if they lose three games in a row, it's going to get so unbearable that the ownership is going to have to make a decision. And I think that's going to be a tough decision, because just like what Derek said, the narrative is going to change. Like, oh, man, they lost three or four games in a row. We're going to have to get him out there. And I think management is going to have to make a big decision and get him out of here.
Part of me, I'm completely torn. Mm-hmm. Part of me thinks Titans ownership is so enamored with Vrabel. I don't know why. But that they're so enamored with Vrabel that they cannot truly see his faults. Mm-hmm. The other part of me thinks they're just as frustrated as I am, and they're letting it be known through a Vrabel-friendly reporter, they are letting it be known that we are going to keep him because we love him, with the translation underneath of, New England, if you want him, you're going to have to give us some draft choices. And that this may be the dreaded vote of confidence. And I can't decide what it is. The one thing that I will tell all of you, I do not trust a single word that Titans ownership says. Not after they released a statement. The day after the Chiefs game in which they won in the playoffs, they released a statement through the team PR staff attributed to the owner that said, Mike Mularkey is our head coach and will be our head coach going forward. And a week later, he was fired. So I can't trust them. How can I trust you? And I will say that, I don't know about you guys, mm-hmm. I always thought Mularkey got a raw deal. I remember how bad it was, and he inherited Wisenhunt's mess, and immediately, and yes, J-Rob did a good job when he first got in here of going out and getting Ben Jones and Rashard Matthews and Logan Ryan and all those guys that really helped change the culture but also helped play good football that first year. And they were 9-7, and then the second year they went to the playoffs, everything else. And so J-Rob was a big part of that, and he and Mularkey clearly hated each other, or at least he hated Mularkey. But the more we watch the bullcrap we're watching right now, the more I keep thinking, God, Mike Mularkey got a raw deal. I mean, Vrabel is 3-14 in his last 17 games. That would get Vince Lombardi fired if that was an entire season. 3-14. I mean, Marvin Lewis never had a 3-13 season as coach of the Bengals, and he was there for 100 years and never won anything. So, like, I mean, again, there's no way around the record. I mean, and yet, we're supposed to sit here and say, oh, Vrabel is not to blame at all for that. Yet Mularkey, in 2 years, won 18 games wow. and a playoff game, and they still fired him. He got a raw deal.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate for Mularkey at the time, because he did inherit a team that was in flux, an organization that was in flux with a head coach they should have never hired. And he somehow, some way, with his coaching staff, put everything back together, and they became a playoff team. Mm-hmm. And for whatever reason, they chose to part ways from him. Stuff like that catches up with you. When you do people wrong like that, mm-hmm. it tends to catch up with you. And it seems like more than likely it's catching up with the Titans right now. You know, so I look at it from the standpoint of, listen, it's okay until it's not okay.
Yeah.
For me, it's okay with the Titans until it's not okay. And when it's not okay is if they lose to the Panthers tonight and then, say, subsequently ends up with a top two or three pick.
Ooh.
Do you trust your head coach to go out there and make the necessary changes?
No.
With the team that – this roster has to be turned over. It has to be.
You know what's crazy too? Like, again, going back to the Mularkey thing, if we were thinking about, you know, the culture that the Titans had for so long, right? Lawan, Byard, Delaney, Jarrell Casey – Derrick Henry, Mariota, which then later, you know, there were more guys, but they kind of were following that pattern of whether it was Tannehill or Simmons or whomever. And I think we can all agree that outside of Derrick Henry, that's all gone now, right? Mm-hmm. Like that culture that they had, that Titan culture, is gone. Who do you attribute it more to, Mularkey or Vrabel?
The culture?
Yeah.
I said, ooh, I go Mularkey.
I think the culture was set when Mularkey took hold of it. Because a lot of those players Vrabel depended on.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the culture was established. I think Vrabel came in, maintained it as long as he could. And I think there's still a culture of the culture of thought is there's still a culture of, hey, we can win, but they just don't have the talent to win consistently. They don't, they didn't do enough during, you know, this run with Vrabel to accumulate enough talent. So when those, you know, the frontline guys started to either retire or they started to lose a step, now those young guys can come in and they can jump on and get to running. That's what's missing. I think the culture is there. The culture, to me, or the foundation, to me, has always been there. We know who the Titans are. We know their identity. We know what they want to be. Mularkey came in and not necessarily created a culture, but he brought back the culture.
They started over.
Exactly. Yeah. They started over.
Yeah.
And what Vrabel did was come in and just take what Mularkey had already established, he and John Robinson, and they ran with it. And as those guys got older, he benefited from it. Now those guys started to get a little bit older, started to get injured. He's not benefiting from that no more.
I saw the Barry Sanders documentary that came out this week on Amazon. And I was thinking about, you know, Barry Sanders was on the Lions and he was carrying the Lions and all of this. But then eventually, you know, they changed the coach and then they went out and they got rid of Lomas Brown and they got rid of Kevin Glover and they got rid of all those guys. And it was just Barry. And that's how I feel right now about the Titans, that it is just Derek now. Gone. Tannehill's gone. Byard's gone. Lawan's gone.
Ben's gone.
Ben Jones is gone.
Davis. All those guys.
Yep, just some good dudes.
And so I just, again, they're going to have to start over, and I just don't trust these two guys to do that. Let's get to TD, who will join us from the stadium. He'll do that next. We are live from Teddy's Tavern downtown. It's the award-winning pregame show on 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Teddy's Tavern here on the program, the award-winning pregame show. TD is at Nissan Stadium where the Titans get set to take on the Carolina Panthers. It is its gloomy outside. TD, who is presented, by the way, by the Beast Unleashed, all the adult beverage fun with zero calories and zero sugar. TD, it is as gloomy right now as it feels like the futures of these two franchises are, or at least the current state between the Titans and the Panthers. What is the vibe in Nissan Stadium for a 1-9 team visiting a 3-7 team?
Yeah, I'll tell you what, the energy is really lacking. This is about as dead as I've seen it pregame. But, you know, it's sometimes it's a part of being a quiet storm, right? And it's the calm before the storm, maybe. I don't know. But it's definitely dead in the building.
TD, what was kind of the surprise factor of the Diana Russini report on your end on Thursday, that the Titans are committed to Vrabel and that no way, no how will there be a change, no trade to the Patriots? We saw Ohio State loss yesterday, so I guess that throws another wrench into it as to would they make a change there. Are a lot of people believing the Titans at face value that they're committed to Vrabel through and through, or are we kind of looking at maybe the quote-unquote dreaded vote of confidence?
Well, I mean, if you're talking about the surprise level of me, you know, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, and some of the callers called me a Mike Vrabel yes man for speaking the truth. You know what I mean? And, you know, like Sister Soldier said, if the truth hurts, you will be in pain. You know what I mean? But I did ESPN Radio a couple of times, you know, over the Thanksgiving break. And one of the topics that we did a couple of shows was head coaches on the hot seat. And both times that I did that, Mike Vrabel's name was the one they threw in there with, you know, some of the other guys, you know, Ron Rivera, et cetera. But I don't really think that there's a overall belief that Vrabel is going to be gone, you know, across the nation. And just with some of the callers that called in when I was doing the show. So I don't think that there's any surprise factor with that report that, you know, some looked at as breaking news, but it's stuff that we here in Nashville have known for weeks.
Now, TD, if this game doesn't go the way that, you know, many feel it should go, meaning the Titans victory, then do you believe the national narrative changes? Because now you've essentially lost to the worst team based upon the record, the worst team in the National Football League.
Yeah. Now, I think the narrative can shift, actually, if they lose this game, because you can't lose to a top, a likely top pick. Well, it's going to be the Bears who are going to get it, but you can't lose to a one-win team at home. You know, that's the one thing that this team has to hang their hats on is, hey, they're 3-0 at home. They play better at home. You drop an egg to this team, it's going to be bad.
Now, what should we expect from the offense? You know, this offense, they didn't look too good last week, and we understand why. But Will Levis did play well, if you just base it upon the stats. They didn't put up many points. Hell, they didn't have many chances to put up points against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers last week. So what do you expect from the offense this week?
Yeah, you know what? Here's the thing. When you look at so J.C. Horn was a guy that they had designated for return from IR, but he didn't get that, you know, elevation, et cetera. So you have that, and then also C.J. Henderson is out. So, you know, you're going to face a corner. I'm not sure who it's going to be, but you could pick on him. Now, if this offensive line, if they could just give a little bit of time, Dante Jackson, the LSU corner, he's a very risky – he's like the Asante Samuel type. Well, he'll jump routes. If you could get time to work a double move, they could be – there could be some big plays. So I think, you know, that's something that I would do. There's other things, too, because, you know, this team, you could run on that defense. So, you know, Derrick Henry should have a big game, should have. We know how the play calling is. You know, they tend to go away from him. But this should be a Derrick Henry game, a signature one for him.
You know, TD, you know, you look at the Panthers' offense. They've given up the offensive line. They've given up 36 sacks. Do you think this defense in front can feast on sacking the quarterback all day long?
Man, that dude, Brian Burns, whoo, he could have a field day. You know, I just want to see how Jalen Duncan is able to handle him. I want to see how Dylan Raiders is able to handle him, because he has a very unique pass rushing style where he could, like, kind of lure you in by coming off the line slow, and then he bursts, and he gets right by the tackle, and he'll go and tackle the quarterback. So, you know, that's going to be an issue. You got Derrick Brown, who's playing really well on the interior, and those two guys, man, that's their problem. So, I mean, this could be a game where you see some sacks. If I'm the Titans, you know, I run at Brian Burns. He's not a bigger pass rusher, so you could run at him to kind of slow him down and wear him down to give Raiders, Duncan, et cetera, some time, you know, opportunities to fire off and make the contact rather than absorbing it.
You know, just looking at this Tennessee Titans wide receiver core, we know about, you know, D-Hop. You know, he makes explosive plays. But what is the reason why, you know, Chris Moore's not getting any more opportunities? I know last week he had one for 49, but why isn't, you know, Tim Kelly getting him the ball more when he's making those explosive plays?
You know, the big thing is the snaps. I mean, last week they had 39 snaps. Come on, man. Like, you can't get everybody the ball in that situation. But, you know, Chris Moore has kind of been like a novelty guy, if you notice, whether it's the end around or it's, you know, shots down the field. That's just how it's been, and it's just you got to find ways to get your playmakers the ball, and he is really your field stretcher. So they got to take some shots, you know, to loosen this thing up.
TD, what do you make of — we know that the report was the Titans aren't interested in firing Vrabel or even trading him to the Patriots, but Ohio State lost again to Michigan yesterday, their third straight under Ryan Day. Now, Ryan Day happens to beat everybody except for Michigan, and a lot of people there are unhappy about that. Do you think there could be any chance that Ohio State could make a move on Vrabel, or that he would have any interest in perhaps taking the Ohio State job?
You know, Jerry, you're going to die on this hill. I noticed that. I mean, this is a hill you are not going to come off of. Look, let me make it as plain as simple. Mike Vrabel is not going anywhere. Period.
I mean, I am 50-50. and the only reason I say this is because the Titans, I mean, the owner even put her name on it. they legitimately lied about the last coach. Like, they said he was the coach, and then they fired him. So that's why I have a hard time listening to what they tell me.
Well, I guess there's a number of people lying to me, too, then. Next question.
Hey. He's not going anywhere right now.
Hey, I was watching some old football films. And,
okay.
This guy walked by, and my daughter was like, "Is that TD? I didn't know he played football." I was like, "Nah, baby, that's Lance Shelter."
Listen, you know what? And I'm gonna tell you, I had a situation myself, right? Listen to what happened. So, my lady, she know, and Chris, you know, I like old school music. You know what I mean? My lady took me to see Jeffrey Osborne, and there was another guy that was there with him. I'm not gonna tell you who it was, but we were right there, like we had stage seats. And he came, he gave my lady a rose, right? And so I'm looking, and she was like, she said, "That was very nice of the guy that you do radio with to come and give me a rose." I said, "Baby, that wasn't Chris Sanders. That was Tebow Bryson."
Wow. TD with the walk-off, as always, TD. Hope you had a great Thanksgiving. We look forward to all your coverage of today's game against the Panthers, which I'm sure will be some of the most read material at ESPN.com between the 1-9 Panthers and the 3-8 Titans. Appreciate you, TD.
Appreciate it. Love you guys. All right.
Yep, TD is presented by the Beast Unleashed. Man. So TD says no way, no how is Vrabel not going to be the coach next year.
I can't see – I don't expect them to part ways with Vrabel.
What percent chance in your heart is it that Vrabel is the coach of this football team kickoff week one next year?
At least 80%.
80%?
I'd say 45.
So you think less than 50?
The reason why I think less is because it all depends on what these last four or five games are. If they lose all these games, I think it's going to get so hostile in the environment to where sometimes he wants to change. He may even ask to be fired. You just never know because, you know, it sounds good right now. We're saying the cute things. But just imagine they've lose these last four or five and six games. I think it's going to be unbearable.
So here's where I think the Ohio State thing becomes a factor, right? Like, if he were to want to go to the Patriots, the Titans could stop that from happening, or the Patriots would have to trade draft picks in order to make it a reality. The Titans can't stop him from going to Ohio State. Just like they can't stop him from working at McDonald's, right? Like, I mean, you know, the only thing the Titans can stop him from doing is coaching in the NFL. So you're Vrabel, and let's say you're making $6 million right now, $7 million. I don't know how much he's making, but let's just say $7 million. Well, if Ohio State calls for you to replace Ryan Day, you're going to be offered at least a six-year deal at probably $9 to $10 million a season. So if you're Vrabel, you know you can't survive another one of these seasons you've just had here. I don't care how much they love you. Like, you're not – you go 3-14 again, and you are out of here. Or you can take the 6 years of $10 million per from Ohio State. And I'm not saying he'd want to go to college, but I'm saying that at that point in time, isn't it the right decision to get out of there before they get you out of there kind of thing?
Well, I mean, I see where you're coming from because a lot of times, you know, when coaches are fired, typically, you know, it's either an offensive-minded coach or the defensive-minded coach. So if I get fired as a head coach, I can always, you know, go and be a defensive coordinator or go and be an offensive coordinator. I don't think there is a – Vrabel is different because it's not like Vrabel came into this head coaching position because he was a great defensive coordinator or he, you know, parlayed his expertise in offenses into a, you know, a head coaching job. He has neither. When he was control of a defense, they were horrible. You know, he doesn't have any say in what – from an offensive standpoint. So, to me, he's a guy that – I think if it came down to it, say if they lost today and then, say, lost the next three out of the next five games they play, I think there has to be some thought from him. Like, okay, should I go the college route, you know, because I get more security there.
Right.
You know, I can go back to my alma mater, coach there, and every year I can replenish. There's not this cap that is put on everything. I can go out and recruit all I want to get all these players. And people want – and guys want to come to Ohio State. So I will always have the the personnel. You know, it's not that way in the NFL. You know, there's restrictions and whatnot. It doesn't operate like college football. I can't go get three or four or five stars every year. I can do that in college. I think that's more of a last, like, okay, all this happened. Now I'm going to go to Ohio State. I don't think that would be his first choice. I don't think he likes the whole grind of recruiting and having to suck up to people and all this other stuff. I think he just enjoys coaching football. Even when you watch him on his coach's show, and I've watched this coaching show the last two or three weeks.
Lab.
Stick with our presented by Parkin Tractor and Equipment. Who's going to be able to click against the 1-9 Panthers today? It should be reminded, and I did watch this game on Thursday Night Football a couple weeks ago. Tyson Bagent, the quarterback of the Bears, clicked. So it's not impossible. With that, picks to click. Chris Sanders, you're up first.
So number one, we always say we can't pick Henry. That's the number one.
Henry is totally out.
You picked him twice. So
I have picked Henry once. I did pick DeAndre the Falcons game, and I felt pretty good about that.
There
last
you
time
go.
They won. I'm just saying.
I know you're gonna. When I make this pick, I know you guys are gonna lose your absolute mind. I'm going with Chig. Chig needs to. I already know. Go and get your last thing.
I'm picking is the tight end who can't catch and can't block.
But that's why I said who needs to be big, right or wrong. He's got to do something, man, because in camp he did outstanding. You was raving about him. Chig is the best in all. You was saying all those things.
Yeah, I really thought he was better than Travis Kelce.
No. But I think for the Tennessee Titans to win, I think Chig needs to make a couple of big catches. I don't care if it's two, three, or four. Just make something big and use his athletic ability.
I got two words for that.
Heck no.
Chig sucks.
Oh, my gosh.
Like, you know, this was a big prove-it year for Chig, and Chig has proven it.
Yeah,
he has proven that he ain't it.
He need to do something.
Yeah, I was high on Chig as well coming into the season.
What Chig Okonkwo is it's like somebody before the year, it's like, hey, you and your significant other, you guys have been doing well, right? You think you're going to get married? You know, we'll see. And then it's like, yeah, he cheated on me 8 times. Okay, well, I think we figured that out.
Oh, man.
Derek, go ahead.
Wow. There's not many pick the clicks, you know, on the offensive side of the ball.
I got mine. I hope you don't take them.
Okay, my pick the click this week. Oh, wow. It's just Wiley. That's my pick to click, Wiley, the tight end.
No.
I mean, they do, because he's proven that he's been more of a reliable pass catcher than Chig Okonkwo. And it's unfortunate, because I think Chig does have the ability and the potential, but potential can have you hold on to a player too long and get you fired, get your t-shirt fired. But Wiley, in his time that he's played, he's been clutch for them. He's made the catches. He's doing an excellent job at blocking. They need to incorporate him more. Vrabel said he wanted to see more of the young guys potentially moving forward. This is one of those young guys that we need to see more of, Wiley.
My pick to click is that Aaron Brewer will snap the ball to the quarterback. I'm kidding. Because I don't think Aaron Brewer's going to snap the ball to the quarterback. No. I'll go with Chris Moore. And here's why I'm going with Chris Moore.
I started to pick Chris Moore, but
if I were to rank the players on offense in terms of who's good and who's not, Derrick Henry's number one. DeAndre Hopkins is number two. I think Chris Moore is number three.
In front of Spears?
In front of Spears, in front of every lineman they have, in front of Levis, in front of Moore is number three. Plus, I don't even think Spears is that good. I think Spears is like a regular third down back. And I think everybody – I keep hearing Spears is so elusive. And Vrabel says he's one of the most elusive players in the league. And then I watched the Barry Sanders documentary, and I'm like, that's elusive.
No, that's comparing apples to oranges.
I watched Zay Flowers from the Ravens.
He's a beast now.
Jitterbug they have at wide receiver. That is elusive. I watch Spears, Dontrell Hill.
We get to see it because he gets the ball often enough.
Absolutely.
If Spears gets the ball more, I guarantee you, if Spears is in any other offense, if he's in the Shanahan offense, if he's in one of these offenses that put a premium on using their running back out the backfield in certain situations, then you would see the potential he has as a running back. Not just running the football, but catching.
He does not catch the ball naturally. Like, he does not catch it like a receiver. Like,
he's
these,
not a receiver.
These, but these backs nowadays that he's talking about, the Kamaras and the McCaffreys.
I think if he had the opportunity, he would.
Do you think they could line Spears up in the slot and he could run around?
Yeah,
yes,
I think he can.
I don't think he can.
He did it in his individual workouts.
I don't care about individual workouts. Zach Wilson was good in his individual workouts.
Guy,
I don't care about individual workouts. Defense, who's clicking?
I'm going Arden Key. He needs to be big. I mean, we looked at him in camp. He made some plays and some splash plays. But if he wants to be that elite player that he wants to be, he's got to be big in this game. I mean, he showed him in camp. He was killing Dillard and all those guys. But I want to see
who
that.
Who do you think that said more about?
So you're just going to kill me today.
Well,
but I'm just saying. I mean,
I think with Arden Key, like, he was given a potential to prove that he could start in the NFL.
That's the point that I'm making.
And it's kind of like a relationship with a significant other where it's like, are you guys going to end up getting married or not? You know, and then they cheat on you 8 times. And he's probably like, well, it's probably not going to work out. That's Arden. He's the defensive version of Chick. He's the defensive version of Chick.
Oh my,
we thought there was a chance.
I need him to click.
And it's gone.
I need him to click today. That's
all right.
That's
I've clicked on him a couple times, and he stunk this year, so I can sympathize with that.
We're at home. It might change.
Derek?
For me, it's got to be DeNico Autry. I think, he has to, when Simmons or Tier Tart are getting double teamed, he has to be the guy coming off the edge and applying pressure to the young quarterback. If he can't get to the quarterback, he needs to put his hands up. He has 6 sacks on the season. He has sort of been not necessarily in and out based upon injury, but in and out in his effectiveness on the defensive side of the ball. But I think if this defense wants to get back to playing the type of defense up front that they are accustomed to playing, that they played last year at times and sometimes this year, then Arden Key needs to be a guy that steps up.
I'll take Simmons. I think that's the easy one. But the reason I'm going with him is because I understand the idea that when you're the only good player on defense, you're going to get double teamed and the defenses are going to be accounting for you at all times. I actually thought Simmons played incredibly aggressively against Jacksonville last week. Like, he was trying to carry the defense because he knew they stunk. Jacksonville just has too many good players for Simmons to be able to do that. Carolina does not. Carolina's line stinks. Carolina's receivers stink. Carolina's back stinks. I mean, this is a game where Jeffrey Simmons is really one of the top defensive players in the NFL. He should single-handedly dominate this game.
And you're right. I don't think they have anyone up front that can – obviously, there are not many that can single-block him. But I don't think the Carolina Panthers has anyone that can, you know, one-on-one block Simmons. And he should be able to defeat – that's like saying if Simmons was with the Carolina Panthers – he should have a field day against our offensive line because they're not good. Well, Carolina's offense isn't good as well, so he should have a field day. And that's why I picked DeNico Autry, too, because I think they're going to try their best to minimize what Simmons does, whether it be, you know, combo blocks or whatnot. So that should open up some things for DeNico Autry. But I understand the Simmons pick.
And also, if you look at some of the best games that Simmons had was at home. So if we're at home today, so – he's got to dominate. I mean, if you want to be that dominant player like Aaron Donald, he's got to make sure with these games, he's got to take over a game. He has the capability of doing that.
Although Aaron Donald does that in the Super Bowl, and we're asking Simmons to do it against 1-9 Carolina.
I'm just saying he has to. It's a must.
Those are our picks to click, presented by Parman Tractor and Equipment. Coming up next, Mike Vrabel's keys to the game, plus a look at the final line of the sports books, and we will have the official game day selections. We are live out here at Teddy's Tavern, where once again, this is our spot for all the home games. Enjoy early and late happy hour every Sunday through Thursday from 4 to 6:30 and 10 o'clock until close. And the rooftop views overlooking all the excitement on Broadway and Bridgestone Arena's main concourse. And of course, like, for instance, if you're going to an event at Bridgestone Arena, Predators play tonight, what you want to do is just head right on over, head here to Teddy's, and then walk right across the street over to Bridgestone Arena for the game and for all the events. So that is our spot here. It is the award-winning pregame show on 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Time to take a look at Mike Vrabel's keys to a Titans victory. We start with the left tackle position from Coach Vrabel. Jalen Duncan, a sixth-round rookie out of Maryland, who when they drafted – you want me to say this?
Please say the stats.
When they drafted him on that third day of the NFL draft, all I remember – you know how, like, once you get into the fifth and sixth rounds, they don't even do the selection anymore unless it's like, we have a koala at the zoo who's going to make the selection. It's always like, you know, it just says it at the bottom and they keep talking about whatever they're talking about. Jalen Duncan got drafted by the Titans. I can't tell you if I was watching ESPN or NFL Network, but it said most sacks allowed in the Big Ten. He will be playing left tackle today against the Titans. Mike Vrabel's key to the game. Vrabel is
excited to see Jalen, and you know, he'll start out there, and this is a great opportunity for him. You know, and Dre will be ready to go, and just through protocol and. You know, ready to go.
And can I elaborate on that a little bit? Just kind of give an illustration. It's kind of like going on a blind date, like what you said. You know, she's good. She has a great personality, but she's got a unibrow. I mean, that's kind of what he was talking about. Like Duncan is good.
Well, then it wouldn't be a blind date.
That is he's telling you how
she
is.
A blind date is when you don't know.
That's what I'm saying.
He's saying, but when he gets there,
he's going on a date with somebody ugly.
So you got to get the joke, man. You can't.
I knew what you were saying. It was just a bad joke.
Hey, but do you see his face? You're like, what is he talking about?
I'm like, but that's not what a blind date is. But more importantly, was reading like the draft scouting reports and the draft gurus. Right. You know, they don't know their ass from a pump handle sometimes, anyways.
What?
But. I don't know, you know, like the pump handles you pump gas out of. the draft gurus, they don't know. But when I was reading the strengths and weaknesses for Jalen Duncan, you know, it was talking about that he has the physical traits of a legitimate starting tackle in the NFL.
He does.
But he has a problem maybe bringing his best on every play.
Mm-hmm. What?
So they're replacing Andre Dillard, it sounds like. With Andre Dillard.
He's just a younger Andre Dillard.
And then it said that, and Blake Bedingfield wrote this at paulkaharski.com, that he thinks that Jalen Duncan might actually be better suited to play guard in the NFL than to play tackle. So, and this goes back to me thinking that the Titans are setting everybody up to fail, specifically offensive linemen. So instead of drafting the All-American tackle in the first round and letting him play tackle, they've put him at guard. So now they're going to put a guy who maybe doesn't play hard all the time, who allowed the most sacks in the Big Ten last year, at left tackle, who's probably more of a guard because the scouts say it, Blake says it, that he might be more of a guard than a tackle. And they're going to put him at left tackle in his first career game against Brian Burns of the Carolina Panthers. Does anybody else think that he's setting this kid up for failure?
Well, he could be, but they have no other recourse.
Well, they could play Raidens there. They could play Dillard there.
They tried that experiment, okay?
I mean, they played Raidens at right tackle, so it's not like that's a
– I mean, they've tried that before. I guess they're hoping just to get, you know
– I mean, you're going to lose – it's going to be bad no matter who it is. I'm just arguing that it shouldn't be – they shouldn't hang the rookie out there.
And I get what you're saying. Like, don't put him in a position where more than likely he's not going to succeed.
Right.
This is where, you know, Tim Kelly's play calling is going to be critical. Combo blocking, max protection, you know, if you're going out, whether it's Derrick Henry or Tajay Spears, chip the guy as you're coming out. Help the tackle out. He's a rookie. This is his first start. Help him out. Skoronski, y'all help him out. Make sure you communicate. So, but he has no other choice. You don't want to throw Dillard back out there. I mean, that's a disaster just waiting to happen. Dylan Raiden's proved he can't play the position. The only guy that hasn't got a true opportunity yet is Jalen Duncan. So you might as well trot him out there. You have nobody else to trot out there. But that's your fault. This is your making. You made this bed, now you got to lay in it.
Yep. I mean, if the day after the draft, when they got up there and they wouldn't tell us if Skoronski was going to play left tackle or guard, even though they knew he was going to play guard, which is stupid to begin with, but again, different discussion. If we were sitting there in a boardroom with those guys and we're like, you do realize that by Thanksgiving, Jalen Duncan will be starting at left tackle over Peter, right? Are you guys okay with that? Oh, no, 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 that won't happen. No, 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 no. And it's like, here we are, Thanksgiving, and your sixth round pick, who is bad at left tackle in college, is starting at left tackle, and your 11th overall pick is not allowed to play tackle.
Well, to me, I think either we will see development because the kid hadn't played, so he's been – they've been sort of developing him.
Sure.
So either you're going to see that, okay, the offensive line coach is doing a good job at developing, or you're not going to see it.
Time now to take a look at the sports books. The Titans are favored, -4. The line opened – excuse me, it opened at -4. It has now shifted down to -3.5.
Good Lord.
The ESPN matchup predictor gives the Titans a 61.3% chance to win, according to ESPN Analytics. Let's get to our game day predictions. Who wins today and why? And I'm going to go first this time.
Go first.
I'm taking the Panthers.
Oh, my God.
I'm taking the Panthers. 24-17, and here's why.
Wow.
The Titans offense, bad. Mm-hmm. The Panthers offense, bad. The Titans defense, bad. The Panthers offense, defense, seventh in the NFL. I'll take the team that has one good unit. I'll take the Panthers.
Oh, wow. I'm taking the Titans. Obviously, this is the battle of the badness, but I'm taking
the toilet bowl.
I'm taking the team that's at home over the the team that is visiting in Carolina Panthers. The Titans have shown, for whatever reason, they play better football at home. I don't understand it. Maybe I never will understand it, but they play better football at home. They average over 25 points per game at home. You're going up against a bad team in general. I don't think their offense is going to be able to generate any points or much of any points, meaning Carolina. I think the Titans win 21-10.
See, great minds think alike. That's kind of like the score that I have, the Tennessee Titans 28-10. I said 28. And I just think that if you look at the Carolina Panthers, there's just a bad team overall. I mean, I know the defense is seventh, but you got an offensive line that's giving up 35, 36 sacks a game. And then on the perimeter, you really don't have a guy that really scares you. I know you have Thielen, you have Chark, who you don't like. So I just think that with the Tennessee Titans playing great at home, I think they're going to blow these cats out 28-10.
There you go. That's going to do it for us. We will be live right here again next Sunday, 9:30. Teddy's Tavern downtown. Special thanks to Teddy's for always having us, and they've never lost when we've done the pregame show here at Teddy's
this
season.
Can I change my thing now?
That is it for the pregame show. We will see you all later this week.
Yes, sir.